Hi everyone, I'm Stephanie Wu, and welcome to the third session of the Master's Course. I hope that by now you have already done some observing of young babies, whether it's your own or someone else's. There is really no right or wrong way of observing. It's just a matter of taking the time to do it. As time goes on, you will get better. So, as time goes on, you will notice things that you didn't notice in the beginning, and you'll be able to see more than you did at first. So today, I want to spend some time talking about observation, you know, observation in general. So Dr. Montessori, her whole approach to all of her theories, everything she developed is based on the scientific approach of observation. So when talking about the importance of observation, she says, we must prepare a person who will be calm, serene, but strong. A person who knows how to dominate by her observation everything that occurs. This is observation. She must know how to look and how to master her own impulses. She must know how to wait. She must be a person having a high grade of virtue. So in this quote, she discusses the importance of the observer being prepared to observe. Without proper preparation, you can be easily biased, and you end up just pretty much confirming your own conscious and unconscious views of the world. I mean, we pretty much see what we expect to see. So what is true observation? True observation is removing emotions and gaining knowledge through the senses. Observation is the key foundation she used to develop her theories. So because she understood how important it was, all of her theories, from sensitive period to the absorbent mind to the four planes, all of that was created exclusively from observing children around the world. So, like you guys know, Montessori was a doctor, okay? But aside from being a doctor, she also studied other subjects extensively, including anthropology. She was very interested in human beings of all ages, and through her observations, she discovered that there's this continuum that exists regardless of the time and culture of people. Montessori then developed her method and materials based on this continuum of universal needs that she saw children exhibited. Because her theories were based on observation, she was able to then observe the kind of assistance children really needed. So she discovered certain things about children. Right, she observed certain things, and then she discovered certain things, and then she tested out different materials that she believed would satisfy the need of the child of this age, and then she observed some more to see if, you know, those materials actually did what she thinks they should do, and then if it didn't work, she would change the material and, you know, try something else. Okay. So what she was after was she wanted something that the children would attach to, an environment that really gave children what they needed. And so she really found how well that worked. And so everything she did and everything she taught to her students is based on this one tool alone. So it's easy to say, you know, okay, we've got this one tool, let's use it. But see, we have so many obstacles when it comes to truly observing, okay? So as adults, we need to first continually perfect our observation skills, okay? And secondly, perhaps even more importantly, we have to find time to reflect on our observations. It's not enough to just observe. We need to take time to think about what we observed and reflect on those observations. So reflection is really an integral part of observation. It's the only way we will be able to truly understand the needs of the child and help them reach their optimum potential. So Montessori says again, it is obvious that the possession of sense and knowledge is not sufficient to enable a person to observe. It is a habit which must be developed by practice. Such preparation should generate in our consciousness the conception of life, which is capable of transforming us. So in the past, in the past of a human being, okay, we always used observation to survive. So historically, people looked at the sky to discover weather patterns. They looked at the length of day to know when to plant and harvest or when to migrate. They really learned to look at plants, you know, which ones are edible, which ones did people eat and die, don't eat those again. And, you know, and they got to really observe animal patterns, and it told them, you know, what to hunt and what to stay away from. So early human beings came to know their environment very well, so they would know how to act in that environment. And their entire survival depended on it, okay? So how did we start developing tools, perhaps? You know, we observed animals digging, and we developed a tool that helped us dig. And in addition to observing nature, human beings also observed other humans. So, you know, the one group of human beings maybe watched others, made clothes from animal skin, etc. So by observing each other, human beings were able to adopt things they wanted and things they didn't. In Chinese history, the most astute and wise people were the ones who knew how to observe natural phenomena and make deductions based on them. So they were the ones that kings and leaders, you know, they went to those people and asked them questions like, you know, what's the best time for planting? What's the best time for harvesting? What's the best time to fight wars, etc.? So observation really helped human beings of the past live in harmony with nature. Today, modern people no longer practice these skills because we don't rely on those types of observation skills to survive. Life has become much easier in many ways. Now, partly our brain sizes have increased, and we continually invent tools to help make our lives easier, make our lives better. And now, of course, we have the information age. You know, we're even further away from observing nature. In fact, we hardly see nature at all, right? Now, as a result, we're not as in tune with nature as we used to be, and we've lost our ability to observe carefully. Our survival used to depend on it, but it no longer does. However, it is possible for us to develop these skills again. Because when you observe newborns, you can see that our ability to observe is inherent. We're born with it. We come to this earth with it. A newborn cannot, you know, he can't touch anything. He really can't manipulate his environment yet. The only thing he has at his disposal is his ability to observe. And he does so very, very intently in order to know his surroundings. For example, when a baby is first born, if you put the baby on the mother's chest, he will stare so intently at the mother, and he will do it for as long as a whole hour before falling asleep. Okay? This is him starting to, you know, to connect to his mother in a new way through his eyes, because that was never the way he understood his mother. But now that he can, he's using that skill, okay, his observation skill, to become, you know, connected with his environment. And anytime they're awake, babies are observing, okay? And through observation, with the help of his absorbent mind, he's creating himself, constructing himself. He's taking in how he's being taken care of, how his clothing has changed, how he's being given a bath, how he's being nursed. He's observing all those activities that are happening to him and around him. So vision at the beginning of life is not really fully developed, right? So he can really only see, you know, a very short distance. So the baby observed not just with his eyes, but he really observes with his whole body and with all five of his senses. Now, young children, they continue to observe as they grow. Some children, when they come into new environments, they like to sit back and observe, okay? Now, others will come into a new environment and they observe by touching everything immediately, okay? So children are observing to take in what they need from their environment with their absorbent minds. Now, because we know this, what we try to do is we try to create an environment for the child that's as beautiful, as rich, and as orderly as we possibly can. Okay? So Like I said earlier, when life became too easy and it's no longer necessary to be in tune with nature for our survival, we gradually lost our natural ability to observe. Now, young children, they're born with this power and they retain this power of observation because they live in the moment. But as they grow older, they too will lose this power. And there are two reasons for it. The first reason is because as adults and as children grow older, okay, we have many preconceived ideas of how life should be. And then we often pull the child away from living in the moment, right? Young children, they're so excited about life. You know, for example, when they see snow, they're like, you know, have you ever seen a classroom full of children just like, you know, looking out the window, looking at the snow? They're so, so excited, okay? But then as adults, we say, oh, it's so cold. We have to stay inside, right? So instead of talking to them about snow, snowflakes, or going out with them to experience snow, you know, we end up stifling their joy. You know, right now I'm living in Taiwan for the summer and it's very hot here, okay? And when you're outside, I perpetually hear adults telling children, oh my God, it's so hot outside. You know, it's so humid. Aren't you hot? Oh, look at you. You're so sweaty. We should go home. And the children, interestingly enough, especially the young children, they don't complain at all about the weather. But the parents keep generating that idea, right, through their speech. And the children very soon will start to pick that up. And that will become their experience of the world. So children will come in contact with many different adults with many different kinds of preconceived notions, okay? So unfortunately, even if the parents try not to put those preconceived notions on their children, other people around them may. So hopefully every child will have at least one person in their lives who can be fully present with them and share with them the joys of the moment, okay? Now, another reason why as children grow older they stop living in the moment and stop and no longer are able to observe like they did is because children want one thing. They just want to be loved and accepted, okay? And in looking for acceptance from that person, they can either succumb to or resist the adult's expectation. The child can sublimate, they can hide, or they can stop their own feelings that he has in order to get acceptance from their parents or from their caregivers. So anyone the child respects and loves can influence him. And gradually, with those interactions, the child loses the child that he is. Now, this is especially true for a child who has a vastly different personality from his parents. These children will succumb to the adult to please them. And they won't even realize that they've done it or that they've been doing it. And those are the same children that when they grow up, you know, they don't really know who they are or they don't know what their interests are, you know, or they just love what their parents love, you know, rather than knowing what they want. Now, the opposite of succumbing to the parents or to the caregiver or to the adult is resisting, okay? So this child will usually resist everything. Life becomes this constant battle. And the child is constantly resisting what the adult wants. As a result, you know, this is the child who looks like he's always throwing a temper tantrum, like in the middle of the supermarket, or even just at home. It's just a very difficult child, okay? So if the child starts out in the resistance mode as he grows up, he can become inflexible, okay? Perhaps he becomes the kind of child who can't take other people's reflections very well, or he can be very rigid and feel that he has to be this way to be the person that he wants to be, okay? Now, of course, this is generalization, you know, but they can become like this. So either they lose themselves in order to please their parents, or they resist their parents completely. Both of these two paths lead a child away from living in the moment and being able to observe. So how can we help this child? We can only help this child through our own ability to observe. Okay? So our own ability to observe, observe the child, see what he needs, and give him what he truly needs. Okay? So, so the most important thing we need to do to regain our power of observation is to prepare ourselves. We have to gain knowledge so we can make responsible choices about those reflections we observe. Preparation means practice. You can't just sit down and say, I want to observe, now I'm going to observe. No, observing is a skill that you acquire over time. It's a skill that you just have to sit down and do. And like I said, reflect and do all those things that we've been talking about. Okay? Another skill we need to develop is the ability to take in the whole picture as well as the details. Because it's the details that will clue us in on how to link the child to the environment. You know, for example, we want children to find things in the environment that they love and want to work with. And this starts from a very, very young age, right? Now, if the child is not attaching to the environment, they're not interested in anything, they're just kind of, you know, blah, kind of, you know, nothing's happening, it's really important to observe all the details surrounding him to find out why that is and help him get unstuck. You know, so the other day, my mom and I, we were at a restaurant, and we saw this mom pushing a baby, okay? So in a pram. And it's the kind of pram that I would expect to see a newborn inside. And we looked in, and it was kind of a big child, you know? He was at least 3 or 4 months, you know? You could just tell that he was kind of older. And his mother had put mittens over his hands. This is very, very common, okay? People put mittens on newborns. They say they don't want them to scratch themselves. And the baby was like, you know, still had a pacifier and was laid down and was completely wrapped up, you know? And my mom and I, we stopped her and I said, wow, you know, he's a very old child. He's a very old child to be lying in a pram like this and also to have his hands covered. And so, you know, so my mom and I basically were, you know, the mother was very receptive, luckily, you know, and she was actually, she wanted to know more and more and more. And so when we took off those mittens, when the mother took off the mittens, you can see that the child's hand, only a 3-month-old, was like flapping, was kind of just plopped, very lifeless on him, you know? And you can tell this is a child who has never had the chance to touch anything for 3 months, okay? When they're most interested in reaching out to the environment, their hands have been kept, basically locked down, okay? And the hands is the child's teacher, okay? The child depends on his hands to experience the environment, but because he hasn't had the chance to, he's actually lost that interest, okay? So just this one detail of having the mittens over the hands for such a long time was very obvious, okay, that what the child needed. So it's our job to have the knowledge, but most importantly, to be able to observe children to know what they really need. Now, another skill we need to develop is self-awareness, okay? We have to look at ourselves in a new way and, you know, with an open mind. We have to know ourselves before we can go and try to know another human being, you know, even if it's a child, right? So children live in the present. We need to be there with them. And that's the only way we can look at them objectively. Montessori says this, most adults are not aware of what's inside of them. If they do not come to awareness, they cannot move forward. Changing yourself to self-awareness changes the world. Okay? So sometimes, though, you won't be able to observe, or you won't be able to do what you want to do or you know to be the best or, you know, and that kind of thing, okay? And sometimes you just have to learn to forgive yourself. You have to be able to say, right now I can't do that. Right now I can't observe. You know, there is a freedom in forgiving and accepting yourself for where you are and how you're feeling in the moment. So us moms and dads, you know, we often have a lot of guilt about what we can and cannot do, okay? But it's very important that you can just forgive yourself, okay? You're doing your best. You're going to try to do this, okay, to observe as best as you can. And when you cannot, you know, you just forgive yourself, okay? Another thing that I want you to consider that would really help your observing is to have new interests and to go to new places and have new experiences, okay? Look at the world. See what new things you can find in it. Because when you have new experiences and new interests, it really helps you look at the world differently and it will help you look at your child differently. So Montessori, she developed her observation skills from her medical training, okay? So in her time, right, like in the early 1900s, there weren't many diagnostic materials. So scientific observation was the key tool that all physicians used to diagnose their patients. And they were trained, you know, for long periods of time in a scientific observation. And Montessori brought this training as a doctor to her work with children. She believed that observation is the key to successfully meeting a child's needs, especially if the child is under 3, because that child hasn't developed the ability to communicate their needs through language yet. Now, Montessori realized that her students had a really hard time observing little children without interfering, right? Because we always, because, you know, even as parents, right, it's really hard to sit back and just watch your child for an hour or two, you know, without interfering. So Montessori came up with a system to help her students. So she taught them that every time they were tempted to intervene, they were to count rosary beads. Okay, so Montessori, she was Catholic. She carried this, you know, this, I guess it's like a ring of beads, you know. And she said that every time we want to intervene, we count beads. Before we intervene, we want to ask ourselves, is this a situation that needs intervention? Or can I maintain my silence and see how it works out? 9 times out of 10, it will work itself out. So through her observation, Montessori discovered universal characteristics of children. She discovered, like, regardless of race, culture, and economics, she discovered just these essential characteristics of human beings. It took her 20 years to come to this realization, but this is what she realized. Children can teach themselves through work, and they can learn easier and earlier than adults thought possible. So Montessori, in the early 1900s, when she created her first school called the Casa dei Bambini in San Lorenzo in Rome, she became an international sensation practically overnight, okay? So she opened her school in 1907, this is in Rome, right? In a place where there was no telephones, no internet, you know, people wrote letters, right? Her work became so well known in the U.S. by 1911. There were, you know, huge newspaper articles written about her. And eventually she was on the cover of, like the Time magazine, okay, of the time. Because her children, as young as 4-year-old, could write. And people couldn't believe that 4-year-olds could do that. And so she literally became an international sensation practically overnight at that time because she had created an environment that allowed children to just be free. And they showed her that, you know, 4-year-olds could write. Nobody could believe it, okay? But not just write, but reading, too, was very early. And children could, you know, children could wash themselves and take care of themselves and cook meals and do a whole bunch of things, okay? And it would never have come to, you know, it would people would never have discovered that if it wasn't because Montessori created this, like, very free, this environment which allowed children a lot of freedom, okay? And so she, and And nobody taught them because she realized that children teach themselves through work. And if you have a prepared environment where the children can go and they're free to choose their own work, they're allowed to follow through, you know, without intervention, then children can teach themselves way better than adults can. Okay? So that was very interesting. And then the other thing she discovered is that if the environment meets the child's needs, the negative behaviors fall away. You know, whether it's biting, crying incessantly, throwing temper tantrums, all of that. When children's needs are met, they didn't need to fight for what they wanted anymore. And this is a process that she called normalization. Okay? So for Montessori, a normal child is happy, is non-competitive, is, you know, concentrating for long periods of time, is helpful, you know, loves people, loves to be social. Okay? So that's what she considered the normal child. The children that we see throwing tantrums, crying, you know, spitting, hitting, biting, all of that, okay, that's not normal. Okay? Those are all signs that the environment is not meeting the child's needs. Okay? And then the other thing she discovered is that when children are left free to work in the environment and self-correct, okay, not that they depend on an adult to correct them, but they can correct themselves, then they become self-disciplined. Next week, I'm going to talk a lot more about this, okay, because I find it to be absolutely fascinating, okay? So next week, we're going to talk a lot more about freedom and discipline. So those are the things that she discovered through 20 years that, you know, when you observe children, you give them the right environment, these are the essential characteristics. So going back to observation skills, okay, so there are three methods of observation. The first method is self-observation, okay, observing the self. Can I see myself objectively, okay? Can I distinguish between my judgments, my emotions, the past that I'm bringing into the present, and know that and you know, clearly see that that's what you're doing, okay? Are you able to do that? And a great tool to use to decide to see if you can do that is to see if you're doing that is to keep a journal, okay? Oftentimes we keep journals, you know, we're just writing down all our preconceived notions, you know, all our, you know, judgments, okay? And we label them as such, okay? And when we're allowed to freely just say, well, this is what I think, you know, through journal writing, we actually allow ourselves to let these, you know, ideas pass through us, okay? So we no longer relate to those ideas as you. But those are just like ideas that I have, beliefs that I have, feelings that I have. They are not me. But through journal writing, you're able to you know, release those things, okay? So that you can bring yourself back to the center and see yourself and children more objectively, okay? So keeping a journal is very, very helpful, okay? Now as you're doing your observation homework, okay, one of the things you can do is you can write your emotions and judgments down. Maybe you write them down with a different colored ink, or you write them on the side, right? In a separate column or something, or on a separate sheet of paper, and you say to yourself, these are my judgments. I know that. Okay? And then now I can go on and observe what I observe objectively. So the second method of observing is direct observation. Okay? So sitting down to observe, writing down what you see, okay? In the margins, you keep track of time, like every 15 minutes, okay? So you know how long you're observing for. And you just write as objectively as possible what's going on in front of you. Write down as much detail as you can, okay? I have actually learned so much about babies through observing them sleep. You know, I've spent, I don't know, hours and hours, like, you know, 10, 15, 20 hours just observing children, babies sleep, And you really learn a lot through that. Okay? So you can sit and observe anything that the child is doing. And then the third method of observation, which we mentioned last week, is indirect observation. So while working in the classroom, or you know, or when you're at home, you know, observing your children, you know, I recommend, you know, observing in a classroom once in a while if you ever get a chance to. Okay, I know this is a course about parenting, and so you may say to yourself, well, you know, I'm not interested in working as a teacher. I know, but this is also, now that you guys are in this, you know, in the master's course, I want you to consider that, you know, all children, you know, we want to get to know all children, because children are our future, right? So whether it's your own or someone else's, we really have the responsibility to get to know children in general. So if you ever get a chance to observe in a classroom, I really invite you to, okay? So whether you're observing in a classroom or you're observing on your own, you know, just, you just want to keep a notebook, and as you're observing, you know, or as you're working, you know, as you're daily, day in, day out with your child, you know, you can quickly jot down things that you've observed. Okay. And then you sit down at the end of the day and you write down everything you can remember. Okay, so that's indirect observation, where you're actually working, or you're actually just, you know, living daily life with your child. And at the end of the day or throughout the day, you come in and you do a little indirect observation, and you write down your notes there. So observation really helps you learn about yourself. Okay, you know, when you're observing children, You'll realize you're really learning a lot about yourself, okay? It helps you establish a deeper relationship with others in the world. And when you can actually look at things objectively, and you can say, okay, you can put aside your judgments, put aside your preconceived notions, and you really observe objectively, you will see more beauty and you will get more satisfaction in life. Okay? Try that out. So the next thing that I want to talk about, the difference between seeing and observing. So the difference between seeing and observing is that seeing is bringing in your own feelings and perceptions to what's in front of you, but observing is an objective process. So that's the difference, okay? So, you know, like we said, feelings are okay, you know, as long as you acknowledge them and separate them from what's really in front of you, okay? You know, when you're observing a child, you know, you want to leave behind your preconceived notions about them. A lot of people, they say, oh, you know, my baby is, you know, a good baby, or my baby is a difficult baby, or this baby, very aware, or this baby, all she wants to do is eat, you know, or that baby, all she does is cry or sleep. So everybody has, you know, people immediately, you know, you can't help it. But when it's your own child, you think, oh, my baby has personality, you know. And, you know, I know that I did that too, right? I'm like, oh, I have two, you know, I have twins, and this baby A is like this and baby B is like this. Okay. It's really easy to come up with this preconceived notions about your children. But when you're observing, you want to be present in your mind and body. You want your mind to be empty, and you want to let your child's true personality reveal itself. Because I tell you, you think your child is one way, but they will surprise you. Okay? If you let them, if you give them the space to be who they are, they may not be who you think they are at all. But if you give them the space, then they can reveal the mystery that they really are inside. So let's talk about some of the characteristics of being an active observer. Okay, so firstly, the adult you must be interested in the child. Okay, now luckily most of us are interested in our own children. Okay, but do we have the same kind of interest in other people's children? Watch, you know, if you can turn it on, okay? If you can turn on interest, whether it's watching your own children or other people's own interest, it will allow scientific observation to be awakened. Okay? And I invite you to be more interested in how your child does an activity rather than what they do. Doesn't matter what they do, but how do they work with it? That is what you want to look at, okay? And you want to be interested in children's development based on what they're currently doing, okay? So, you know, a couple weeks back, you know, I told you guys about like the timeline of like gross motor movement and fine motor movement and all of that, right? And maybe some of you found that to be very interesting, you know, but it's really like a timeline, sort of a general timeline. But when you're observing this one child in front of you, we're not interested in timelines. We're not interested in general development. We're interested in this child and this child only. Okay? So I invite you to consider that. Don't think what they should be doing or what I really, you know, oh, my friend's baby is doing this. How come mine isn't yet? Or Stephanie said that my baby should be doing this and they aren't yet. Or, oh, Stephanie said my baby should be doing this, but my baby's already doing this. Oh, he's so advanced. No, neither of those are really going to be helpful to you. Okay? You know, in observation, because already your mind is taking you elsewhere. You're not being present. Okay? So leave the past in the past. Observation is like meditation. Okay? So when you sit and observe, it's so easy for your mind to wander. You know, you're observing your child, you're writing, and you're thinking, okay, what am I going to make for dinner? You're sitting and observing, you're like, okay, after this, I'm going to go and grocery shop, and then I'm going to buy this, and I'm going to buy that, and then the whole time your child is doing something, and you miss the whole thing because your mind was wandering, okay? So I meditate almost every day. So when I sit down to meditate, the first thing that happens is my mind wanders, and then that's okay. Wandering is just, you know, it's just a mechanism of your mind. You just bring yourself back to the center. You bring yourself back to the child, okay? And you're there with them, and you're present with them. And your mind will go away, and it's okay. That's okay. As your mind goes away, you just bring it right back, okay? And it's a practice, and I would say that it's a very high-end self-awareness kind of practice. You know, you're not just developing, helping your child, but it really develops you as a person as well as you're doing that, right? Letting your mind wander, bring it back. Letting your mind wander, bring it back. Always bring yourself back to your center. Always coming back to the child. Which means that you can't multitask, okay? Can't be checking your cell phone. Can't be checking Facebook. You know, I'm guilty of that, right? But put your phone aside, okay? Put everything aside. Your mind can only focus on one thing at a time. Truly focus on one thing at a time. And let your child be that one thing, that one time. If you never do that, if you're always a multitasker and you don't like to, you know, sit and focus on one thing, let your child be the one thing that you sit and focus on, okay? So only through the silence of the mind are you able to embrace what's in front of you, okay? And also, you need to be alert and aware and know that there are certain things that can affect how alert and how aware you really are, right? You know, like caffeine, okay? Some people need caffeine to focus. Some people, when they have caffeine, they're very jittery. Okay, so you have to be really aware of yourself. You know, if you are so tired, you're falling asleep, perhaps you need to take a nap. Okay, so you do need to be alert and aware of what is happening. Also, your body should work together with your mind and your hands. Okay, so, you know, you're writing, right, what you're observing, don't worry what you're writing down in the beginning. You know, maybe in the beginning you're like, I really don't know what to say. You know, don't worry. Just write something. Just write what you see. You know, just write, my child is doing this. He's doing this. He's doing that. And just don't worry about it, okay? Just work. It'll work itself out. Just write something, okay? And I want you to look at your child, you know, and other people's children too, with an aspect of love. Not the gushy, oh my God, I love me, so cute. You know, no, not that kind of love, okay? But a true interest in children, okay? In that you simply want the best for them. So the adult must have humility in order to wait and let the child show you the secret of his development, which means we have to have patience, okay? So so patience and humility is the two big ingredients when it comes to working with children. And I would say that I really felt that way when my children were, you know, babies and then when they were toddlers. But as time goes on, even now that they're 3 and a half, I think patience and humility are more important than ever before, okay? So patience and humility is the only things that will allow us to see the child for who he is. So let's talk about how observation aids our work. So our observation should help us to link the child to his environment, to his home, okay? So that we know what materials he needs. You know, for example, you know, when a child is on all fours, right? And he's like starting to rock back and forth. He's not crawling yet, but he's like almost getting there, right? You know, you want to encourage him to move forward, but you don't want to get a ball that's going to roll really far away. So a hard, you know, ball that's going to roll really fast is not going to help him. This is a point where you want to get a soft ball, okay? Because it doesn't move too far and it won't be discouraging for the child. Okay, like that, okay? So observation also helps us see the child's obstacles. What are his obstacles so that we can remove it? You know, a hard ball that rolls too fast, it's an obstacle, you know? Or I'll tell you what else, like when a mat, when you have, you know, we talked about having movement mats, you know, for the baby when he's doing a lot of tummy time when he's young, maybe, you know, 2 months to 6 months or so, he's really working on his tummy a lot. But by 7 or 8 months, that mat has become an obstacle. What used to be an aid is now an obstacle. You have to take it away. Okay, so only observing can we see that. Observing also helps us see our environment and how important it is to keep it orderly for the children, for the child. Okay, and we also, you know, you want to be able to instantly look at the shelf, your child's shelf, or, you know, your child's toys and see what needs to be replaced or what needs to be removed. Okay, so observation allows us to use the theory that we've talked about, all the theories that we've talked about to this point, and all the timelines and everything that we've talked about to this point. It allows us to use those things to the best of our abilities. So some children will manifest, you know, sensitive periods very subtly, and we have to be observing to see it, you know. We also have to observe like the child's absorb a mind and see how much the child is taking in, okay? So when we can do that, it gives us the confidence and the initiative to give the child more than perhaps we think he's capable of before we started observing him, okay? So the adult in a child's life, you and I, okay, we are an aid to life. If we can stay true to that statement, then observation can be seen as an aid to the human being and to his continual development throughout life, okay? It encompasses, you know, what he does at home, but it also encompasses what he'll do in the future in the community and the world overall, okay? So the purpose of observation in life is to understand the environment, understand everyone who's living in it so that we can live in harmony with ourselves, with each other, and with the world. Okay? So that's what I wanted to talk to you guys today about observation. I hope that it'll give you, you know, a little bit of a sense as you start to do the homework and do the observing. I would really love it if you guys can send me an email and let me know where you are with the homework, whether you've started. Remember, again, we're doing 25 hours of observation, 15 of which need to be direct and 10 of which can be indirect. You want to write down everything you observe, especially during the direct observation, everything you observe going on with the child, okay? And so that's the time when you will need someone else to be there to take care of your child. And so next week, I'm going to be talking about freedom and discipline. To me, there's no topic more interesting, okay? Observing is critical. It's the most important topic. And there are other topics, obviously. I love the theories and all of that. But for me, freedom and discipline, there's a key in there. There's really a key in there. And I want to give it to you guys because you really need to start very young, okay? By the time you see discipline happening for children, usually they're already very old. Or not very old, but, you know, at least, you know, 3, 4, 5, okay? But it doesn't happen overnight. You see discipline because the seeds were planted when they were 6 months old. So I want to talk to you guys about that. I hope that you will get as much from it as I did when I learned about it. And that's it. All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And if you have any questions, I want you guys to email me. That's it. All right. Bye.